Gospel this evening, chapter 7. If you have a Bible and you want to turn there, Luke's Gospel, chapter 7. And we'll begin at verse 1. Just to say that normally on a communion Sunday, we take up a benevolent fund offering, which is distributed by the elders of the church for those who are in need financially in our congregation, in our church. And so if you a member or a regular adherent here, you're welcome to take part in that offering, and that'll be during the last song this evening. Luke's Gospel, chapter 7, and verse 1. When Jesus had finished saying all this in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum, and there a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him, "This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, 'Go,' and he goes, and that one, 'Come,' and he comes. I say to my servant, 'Do this,' and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd that were following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house, and they found the servant well. Just so far. There was once a man who bought a piece of land in order to build his dream house. He not only spent a lot of money and effort on designing this house, but he spent a great deal of effort and financial resources in laying the foundations to this house. In fact, he went to the end degree of drilling down deep into the rock that lay under the ground in which he wanted his house to be built. And he built these foundations on this rock so that his house could be unmovable and strong. Sometime later, after his house was completed and he had finished all the nice finishes to it, the area where he lived experienced the 1-in-100-year flood. This man's dream house was battered by the elements, battered by the waters, but yet it stood firm and survived the flood waters, all because its foundations were firm and strong. There was another man who, right next to him, also wanted to build his dream house. He didn't think much about it, just wanted to live in a nice place with a nice house, the house that he surfed the internet with, or surfed the internet for, and he found it. He placed his order, and it was delivered and plonked on the site that he had purchased. He didn't bother about foundations or anything like that. He just wanted to enjoy his new house. Well, you know what happened. The 1-in-100-year flood came and washed his house away. And the very next day, he was back on the net surfing for a new house to put on that land. Now, I'm sure you are pretty familiar with the story. If you went to Sunday school as a youngster. But if you're not familiar with this story is a story that Jesus told. And he told his followers that if they would like to build their dream house, or rather their dream lives, the lives that God had created us to enjoy, then they needed to build their lives on a firm foundation, a strong foundation. And he said that foundation was himself. They needed to have faith in Jesus Christ. He is the rock in which we are to build the lives that God created us to enjoy and to experience here on this earth. You can actually read that story at the end of Luke chapter 6. because Jesus takes time over there to explain on the Sermon on the Plain, not on the Mount this time, but the Sermon on the Plain, to teach his disciples, his followers, what it means to have the life that God created us for. But what does that life look like? What is that life that solely rests in faith in Jesus Christ? What does that life look like that builds its foundations on Jesus Christ and faith in him? Well, Luke records for us this evening, straight after that story that Jesus taught, he records for us a story in which illustrates that incredible, that amazing faith that Jesus is asking us to have. Luke records for us this actual story, an unexpected faith in a Roman centurion. Roman centurions occupied every town that was under the great Roman Empire of the day. Their responsibility was to make sure that Roman legislation was followed by all those who inhabited the towns that they were placed over. They were called centurions because they usually had an army of about 100 soldiers under them, just to make sure that in every town under Roman rule, legislation of Rome was followed and prevailed. You can imagine, Roman centurions weren't exactly the populous guy in the town. In fact, they were seen to be oppressors and seen to be the enemy, and therefore didn't have a good relationship with the folk of any town. They were usually men who dealt with people harshly and cruelly, making sure that their best interests in terms of Rome was carried forth. But our passage this evening tells us of a Roman centurion in the town of Capernaum, and just to give you background to that, Capernaum was Jesus' headquarters in terms of his ministry in Galilee. There was a Roman centurion in this town, Capernaum, who was seen in a different light to the centurions of the day. In fact, we're told by Luke that he had a servant that he highly valued. The Greek word translated highly valued there means that he was honored by the centurion. In other words, the centurion never saw the servant as just some kind of tool in his hand or in his possession, but someone that he really, really cared for, that he treasured in his life. We see this because his servant became sick and was about to die, and the centurion was willing to do anything for this servant of his. We go on to read that he went to the Jewish elders of the town of Capernaum, the ones we would presume he would go to last for help. And he asked them to speak to another Jew who had the power to heal people. This centurion was not your run-of-the-mill centurions, because even the Jewish elders viewed this man in a different light. He was a man they were willing to help out, even if it meant doing something they were not completely comfortable with. You see, the Jew that the centurion asked them to go to was called Jesus. This imposter to the Jewish faith, this insignificant man from nowhere, who was claiming and in their eyes blaspheming as he was calling himself the Son of God. But they were willing to do this for this centurion because he was unlike any other centurion. He was a good guy. He was a decent guy. He had good relations with the Jewish people in which he ruled and was over. He treated them with respect. And he personally, himself, out of his own wealth, built a place of worship for them, known as the synagogue. And in their eyes, if anybody in Rome deserved something good to happen to them, it was this Roman centurion. For he had a heart for people. Whether it be his slave or whether it be those under his rule, this centurion was a decent guy, a good man. And so when they reached Jesus, they pulled Jesus aside and said to him, "This man, this Roman centurion, this Gentile that doesn't really belong to the Jewish people, the people of God, deserves, is worthy of your favor, Jesus, on his life." deserving of your favor by healing this his servant, because he loves the Jewish nation and he has built us a place to worship. He is a good guy. He has done good things, and you should repay him. You should have your favor upon him and show him favor by healing his servant. I want you to notice that how the Jews viewed the centurion's worthiness before Jesus is how they viewed their own worthiness to receive God's favor on their own lives. You see, their faith is based on works. If I do good in the eyes of God, if I keep his commandments, if I help the poor, if I go to the synagogue weekly or daily and I offer my praises and my sacrifices to him, then I deserve, then I am worthy, then I am the one whom Jesus will want to offer his favor, offer his blessing upon. Their foundation to their dream lives, if I could say that, was built on their own worthiness. I guess that's why they struggled with what Jesus taught and said. Remember, the foundation to the dream life, as we said earlier, was faith or trust in Jesus alone, who he is and what he has done for us. You see, Jesus taught that he was God, and that no matter what good we did, we could never be deserving, we could never be worthy enough of God's favor, of God's blessing on our lives because of the rebellious things that we've done. But that if we believe in Jesus, if we believe in his power and his authority to make us worthy before God, then we will receive that life that we long for, that life that will exist forevermore. But the Jews of the day just couldn't see that. They couldn't see Jesus for who he really was, the Son of God, the all-powerful and all-authoritative one. And so they ignored, they rejected what he had to say. And instead they built their lives, they built their dream lives on no foundation at all. But let's look at how the centurion, the Roman centurion, viewed himself. When the Jewish elders said to Jesus that he is worthy for Jesus to show him blessing and honor and favor, this centurion, on hearing Jesus was coming to his house, said, "I'm unworthy, I'm undeserving of your favor, Jesus." Have a look what he says. He says, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve you to come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you." Now, it could seem his unworthiness is based on cultural or religious issues of the day, as there was a great divide between Jews and Gentiles. Gentiles being those that weren't part of the Jewish people. Jews never went into a Gentile house, nor were Gentiles ever invited into a Jewish house. And so one could assume that the centurion did not at first want to embarrass this great Jewish man who possessed this ability to heal and do miraculous things by having him come under his roof. But if we examine closely what he actually said to Jesus, we see that it's not a cultural issue. It's not a religious issue. He says, "I don't deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not go out and consider myself worthy to come to you." His unworthiness is based on Jesus. His unworthiness is not based on Jesus coming under his roof, but rather his unworthiness as a person before Jesus. The way the centurion sees himself in the light of who Jesus really is unworthy, is undeserving of the favor, of the blessing of Jesus on his life. And so he doesn't even want to go out and speak with Jesus face to face. It's obviously clear that this man has heard something about Jesus or knows something about Jesus. In fact, he might have been there when Jesus performed that miracle in the synagogue that he built, when he drove out a man possessed by a demon. He might have even heard the demon cry out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? I know who you are. You're the Holy One of God." if he wasn't physically there to witness that great miracle in the synagogue that day, I'm sure being a prominent person in Capernaum, he would have heard about it. And I'm sure he would have heard the many other miraculous things that Jesus did and said. And so the centurion knew or had come to hear who Jesus was. And his unworthiness was based on the reality of what he believed Jesus to be. We see this in what he says next to Jesus. As his friends came to Jesus, they said, or they passed on this message to him, "Just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. I tell that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." You see, this Roman centurion saw in Jesus a power and an authority that was way beyond anything that he knew or possessed himself. You see, he reasoned that if he was a military officer with some limited power and authority, an officer who could still sit under the authority of those above him, but yet still command others to go and to come and to do this and to do that, then Jesus, who possessed independent power and authority over the universe as the one he claimed to be, the Son of God, God himself, who could tell demons to go out of a man and they would flee, to tell sicknesses to leave people and they would go immediately and be restored to health, to call upon health to come and health would come at a word of Jesus, then he must have power and authority that is unique only to him, being God himself. In other words, this man believed Jesus was whom he said he was and showed himself to be the all-powerful, the all-authoritative Son of God. And he showed his faith in Jesus by asking Jesus to heal his servant, not because he was a good guy, not because he had done good things for God's people. No, but on the basis that Jesus had and possessed the authority and the power to heal his servant. Well, this almost floored Jesus Christ on this occasion. If you read through the miracles recorded for us in Scripture, we normally find that after Jesus performs miracles, it's the people who witness those miracles that are amazed and are floored at the power and authority of Jesus. But we read here that Jesus now stands in amazement because of this Roman centurion's faith in him. It's a faith that he expected from his own people because they were the ones that had all the history. They're the ones that had the Scriptures of God. They're the ones that were told about the Messiah coming and doing these wonders before them. Not this Gentile, not this Roman centurion. But when he saw and heard about Jesus, he believed in what Jesus said about himself. And that's why Jesus turns to those crowded around him, and I'm sure there were disciples of Jesus, followers of Jesus. I'm sure there were those Jewish elders that brought that message to Jesus to come to the centurion's house. I'm sure there were other Jews in Capernaum who were following Jesus to see what next this miracle worker would do. And he turns to them and he says, "I tell you the truth. I have not found such great faith even in Israel." Amazing faith. Faith that completely trusted in who I was. Faith that asked me to do what only I could do. And we read the results of such faith in verse 10. As the servants, as the friends of the centurion returned to the centurion's house, they found the servant well and restored to full health and strength. It's such faith, friends. It's such faith in who Jesus is that results in God's favor and his blessings on our lives. It's such a faith that is the foundation to the lives that we only can dream of. The lives that we are created for, to enjoy forever and ever. Faith that results in God's favor. Faith that results in God's blessing. Faith that results in God's grace and His mercy to be lavished upon us is the faith that completely and utterly trusts Jesus for who He says He is. We all know John 3 verse 16 very well, but even in those, on that familiar verse, we see this principle being told to us. It says, "For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whosoever believes in Him has faith in who He is and what He has done for us, will not perish, but have eternal life, will enjoy the life that God created for us to enjoy, will enjoy the favor of God, the blessing of God forevermore." So friends, God's favor on our lives does not depend on how good we are, does not depend on the good we do, for we are unworthy because of our rebellion against God, because of our sin. But God's favor comes to us undeservingly through faith in Jesus Christ. How can we see that faith in our own lives? How can we experience that faith in the lives that we are living as followers of Jesus Christ? Well, why don't we do the same as the centurion? Why don't we reflect on the things that we ask Jesus for? Not only for ourselves, but maybe for our church. How have we asked Jesus to work His wonders in our lives and the lives of others? If we have asked Him to do something only He can do because He is the Son of God, because He possesses all power and authority, if we have asked Him to do something acknowledging that His doing it rests on not whether we are worthy or deserving of it, but entirely on the truth that He can do it, if we have asked Jesus to do something or for us, something that we are undeserving of His favor, but knowing that He is gracious and merciful, and that He loves to show us His grace and mercy in these ways, then we might be able to see in our own lives this faith, this amazing faith that Jesus saw in the centurion, the Roman centurion. If we ask God to do something or for something because we feel that we are deserving of it, or we like those Jewish elders, we think someone else is deserving of it, then we are like that foolish builder. We are building our lives on no foundation at all. And when the times of hardship, the times of God's judgment come upon us one day, our lives will be swept away. But if we ask God to do something or for something because we know that He is worthy, because He possesses all power and authority, then we'll be like that Roman centurion. We'll be like that wise builder, and we will experience God's favor, God's blessing on our lives. Faith that is amazing is faith that trusts Jesus for who He says He is. Let's pray together.